so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
So we're back. It's time for another Toy Department. Is this, if I'm not mistaken, the last Toy Department of 2017?
Why?
I don't know. Because next week's a holiday and I'll be traveling and then it's 2018.
Oh, next week's the 26th. You're not available?
I guess I'm available from the road.
Because you know this is episode 99, so our next episode is 100.
What I do know is that this is probably something we should have worked out in the pre-show meeting that we were literally having 30 seconds ago. All right, I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. and this is apparently the penultimate podcast of 2017.
Well, I don't know. I will say, I will be traveling the following week, so maybe this is the ultimate podcast of 2017, and you won't hear from us for like 2 weeks. I don't even know. 3 weeks. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough. You'll hear from us when you hear from us. But this week, you're going to hear from us on our favorite things of 2017. It's that time of year.
Which does make sense if this does turn out to be the last podcast of the year. Maybe we'll just leave it here. We'll talk to you in 3 weeks, guys. Thanks for listening. After this.
Are you the kind of person that likes to make these lists? Like, if we weren't doing a podcast, would you be like organizing your favorite things of the year
and like posting it on Facebook?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a Facebook person, but yeah, that kind of thing, or you know, Instagram.
I have a close friend, a dear friend, who makes lists on Facebook. It's just like a thing that he does. But usually they're
funny,
sillier lists.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they're not always funny. I don't know how to explain it. Let me see if I can find one. But yeah, I'm not a big list guy, I guess. I would have. You know what? I'm not a list guy. I'm a guy who throws out ad hoc rankings without ever making a list.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know what I mean?
I'm
a guy who's like, oh yeah, that's top five of the year. Oh yeah, that album is the top five album of the 90s.
Oh, see, okay. Then you're doing the Dick Vitale thing, right? Where you have
there's probably
37 on your first
team
all Diaper Dandy. You know,
that's right.
It's unbelievable.
That's right. I think I do that more than I actually make lists that I like share. So here's an example of one of my friend Jake's lists. Crooked Media Podcast Empire Personalities Ranked.
Okay. So he just ranks things.
Yeah. Number one is Sorry. Number two is This Is a Bad Idea. Number three is I've Decided Not to Do It. Number four is They're All Pretty Good. Number five is The Ads Have Gotten a Little Too Meta. You know, and there's nine. It goes on and on like this, and they're increasingly bizarre.
And there are no actual personalities in there. I'm guessing.
No, like, human personalities, no.
See, and I think it would be funny if one of them was, like, Dan Pfeiffer and then went back to the other stuff. See? All right. Well, never mind. I'm writing your guys' jokes.
Then he made a Breakfast Meets ranked a little before that, where there are one, two, three, four, five versions of bacon if you include Canadian bacon.
All right. We may shamelessly rip off this concept later on. Not in today's podcast, but eventually. So.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no. Jake's list could even be a segment if he's a strange dour man and I don't think he listens to the podcast, but I can find out.
All right. Well, that's a way to get one more in the building. All right. So before we get to the best of 2017, we saw Star Wars.
But enough about my random friends' lists.
Yeah, let's talk about Star Wars.
I am fascinated to hear your take, and I will not spoil it other than to tell you that one thing I can say is you will not be hearing about this film when we go through our best of lists from me.
Okay. I'm going to say the opposite. You will be hearing about this on the best films list from me.
Wow.
I thoroughly enjoyed this movie.
Wow.
From start to finish. It's my favorite Star Wars movie, maybe since Empire. I thought it was an achievement. I loved the direction from Rian Johnson. I thought it looked amazing. And it's such a joy. Like, when you go back and watch the original, you know, the original trilogy, you know, yeah, you have Sir Alec Guinness and you know, some of the supporting players are pretty good actors. But, you know, a lot of the principal characters are kind of wooden. And I think it's just such a joy to have people like Oscar Isaac and Laura Dern and John Boyega floating around this movie. And of course, I left out Adam Driver, who I think is, you know, his performance is at the heart of this one. And I think he's so good and so compelling and so watchable. You know, it's not a movie that didn't have some issues. It's a little long. And I think we've now gotten to the point of the Star Wars saga where if we're going to come out with a movie every year, that they're going to have to deviate from this, you know, we're the rebels against the longest of odds. We need to blow a thing up to live for one more day. Here's a Jedi lightsaber battle we'll throw in the middle. That just sort of basic template that's kind of been all Star Wars movies. Like, there
well,
has
but
to
here's
be
my problem.
More
didn't
aspects
we say
of
that
Order
year,
Discover.
Didn't we say that 2 years ago?
I don't know that we said that. I think 2 years ago was a little bit more about, oh, this is just a rehash of, you know, of A New Hope. And, you know, one of the things that that's another thing that I really liked about this is that this is a movie that certainly nods, I think, to Star Wars lore and the past, and has characters that maybe are reminiscent or echoes of characters, but it's not simply a remake. You know what I mean? Like, it's not its own plot point
for plot point. All right, so let me come back at you a little bit here.
Okay.
First of all, I think a lot of what you said is true. I think it's beautiful to look at. I think I have no complaints about the acting. I don't know why everyone is so crazy over Adam Driver, but I think he's good.
An Adam Driver just fan in general? I tend to think he's good in pretty much everything.
I do too, and I think this is not in his top five. I think he's perfectly good. I think it's a mediocre character. I don't get why everyone thinks this is a good character. Why? And to me, it's this movie imbued Kylo Ren with the same obnoxious whininess that makes the original trilogy fall apart because Luke is such an annoying piece of garbage.
Yeah, see, I don't.
And that's what I would say is I think actually Mark Hamill does his best acting job of the entire series in this movie.
Yeah, you know what?
I think he's
100% agree with that, by the way. And I didn't mean to mention that because I do think Mark Hamill was wooden in the originals.
Yes, he's not a very good actor as Luke in the original trilogy, but I thought he was exceptional.
Props to Rian Johnson for that, too. Although I think Hamill, you know, I think all the voiceover work and stuff he's done in the interim.
I think he's become a better actor.
Yeah, it's helped his chops.
And he was really, really good. And you're right, Oscar Isaac is excellent. I think Daisy Ridley is a joy. John Boyega plays the most interesting part in the series really well, I think. Because to me, people are raving about, oh, the conflict in the villain, and I don't get it. I saw a petulant, whiny teenager personality who never really, like, I just never really got the feeling there was conflict in him. I got the feeling there was petulance and angst, not spiritual conflict. To me, it's just it's a story about a whiny prick kid who got mad and happened to be powerful enough to throw one of the biggest temper tantrums ever.
Yeah, see, I think we're looking at the same thing. You know what I mean? Because I'm not. I hear what you're saying. you know, and I'm not here to go, nuh-uh, you know what I mean? But because I see some of the traits that you're talking about, I just think my viewpoint in that is different. You know, I don't interpret what – I do see conflict. I don't interpret – yes, he has that sort of young man's anger, but I don't necessarily – I don't view that as petulance. I don't view it as annoying. I do view it as genuine conflict. I would say certainly the fact that he, you know, got right up to the point and was unable to pull the trigger a couple of times was fairly good evidence of that. But I think you're seeing the struggle of the force inside him that sort of consumes not only his character but his lineage. You know, and it's such
does
such
it consume
a,
his lineage though?
Yeah,
it never it was never a problem for Leia. I mean, I guess Grandpa was a nut.
Grandpa was a bit of a nut. I think Luke had some inner turmoil. I know he's not Luke's son directly.
Right. I mean, you know,
certainly
yes.
Solo was a conflicted character at times too, I might add, you know. And I think that's so important to the story of the Jedi and the Force and the balance, and I think the interplay of that balance between Daisy Ridley, the Rey, and the Kylo character, like that so much of the movie turns on. I thought all of that stuff worked. I also really loved just how, you know, without banging you over the head, like a lot of, you know, like some, you know, like let's say Wonder Woman kind of did. And no slight to Wonder Woman because I enjoyed Wonder Woman. It was honorable mention on my list that we'll do later.
Me too.
But I think that movie sort of hits you over the head with feminist empowerment, and I think this movie is just a movie with a ton of really interesting feminist empowerment and diversity messages running through it.
Yeah, that's not untrue. I think I'm not sure that's a credit to Star Wars and a detriment to Wonder Woman as much as just sort of the nature of the beast with the two stories. But... here's another thing that you made me think of when you brought up Wonder Woman. And again, I should say, because I am now cast in the role of anti-Star Wars, that like this is a 3 out of 5 star movie for me. You know, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying I didn't enjoy some of my time in the theater. Like the guy I saw it with, who's a big, you know, Star Wars nerd from way back, was very upset. And I was not. That's not how I felt. I was a little disappointed because I had very, very high expectations, and I just think people say things that they don't think about, I guess. Like this idea that this revolutionized the Star Wars movie and Rian Johnson did something so original and unique, it really feels over the top to me.
I don't feel it was original or unique, but I do feel like it was the best directed Star Wars movie I've seen. And I don't know.
That's a little unfair to the original trilogy. Maybe. I think it's the best directed of the last five, certainly.
I mean.
But that's not saying that much.
I guess when you're.
There was nothing special about the direction of The Force Awakens. That just felt like a digest.
Yeah.
That's what J.J. Abrams does. That's fine. But this is the first three, you know, the prequels stunk. And this is a perfectly good movie. It's just – here's the other thing I was going to say when you brought up Wonder Woman is, to me, there's this humor in Wonder Woman that is legitimately funny and legitimately enjoyable and lighthearted. And, you know, there are fun relationships between characters. And it never feels tongue-in-cheeky, wink-at-the-camera-y in a way that – and this actually may be something that you liked about it, because I think this is something that probably turns you off about superhero movies, but and you know, epic fantasy and science fiction tales of this sort. There's usually a sincerity. And this movie, I feel like, was caught in between like a Thor Ragnarok or Deadpool level camera wink and the sincerity of a Star Wars film.
I thought this movie was significantly funnier than Wonder Woman was. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, so that's the thing. Is like it is funny, but the tone,
not the metric I'm looking to judge the film overall. But if we're just talking about funny,
no, totally. And it's not. Nor is it the metric I would use to judge the film overall. I'm just saying the tone of the humor in this movie was distinctly un-Star Wars-ish to me. And that, and it's not, that's not a disaster because it was funny, but it is, it was something that felt weird while I was watching it.
Mm. I mean, I think I came in with lower expectations than you did after the last one.
Probably.
Yeah. My expectations were pretty high for the last one, and I kind of enjoyed the last one. I saw it twice, but as the further I got away from it, the less I liked it. You know what I mean? When you can jump back and go, oh, this is just
you don't want to think too hard about Force Awakens.
This movie, my expectations were a little bit lower, and it was long. I realized that on my way out of the theater when I saw what time it was. You know what I mean? Right. Like, I was wrapped, for the duration of this movie, and I not a lot of movies do that for me anymore.
It would be fascinating to be able to crack open our heads respectively and try to understand what happens here, because I think the Vegas odds had me liking it more than you, right?
Yeah, I would say. Do you what do you make of the and we're sort of touching on it here with you talking about your friend. There seems to be a divide between the critical response to this movie, which has been fairly rapturous, and the geek response to this movie. Not calling your friend a geek, but the hardcore response.
Oh, no, he's absolutely a geek, yeah.
What do you make of that divide exactly?
Well, I mean, fundamentally, they're looking for different things, I think, right?
I guess, yeah. And maybe part of why I like it is that I'm not really that interested in the fan service-y things.
That's right. Mm. Well, and in my friend's defense, I don't think he's not the sort of nerd that would demand fan service or allegiance to something specific. He's a pretty thoughtful dude. And I think he probably mostly just has harsher versions of the takes that I had. I think most of his response and part of mine is that I do have an idea, like an ethos of a Star Wars movie. And I guess maybe what people are responding so positively to in a way is that this doesn't quite fit it. This doesn't quite slide into the rubric. I mean, it has the same Rebels have to blow something up plot, but other than that, it's a little different tone wise. It's a little different.
Do you recognize the need that if we're going to have 12, 15 of these movies that we have to get away from the ethos?
Yes, but I don't know that the core. Like, I think Rogue One got away from the ethos in a really good and interesting and well-done way.
Yeah.
And I think it makes sense. I'm not sure that Episode 8 is the place for that.
Oh, I don't know. I think you got to start transitioning the story.
It's going to be Episode 8 and 9, and it's over. That's the end of this story. There will be other stories in the universe.
Aren't they doing a whole other trilogy, right?
Yeah, but I don't think it's necessarily directly related in the same way. Like, I'm not sure it's going to be about the Skywalker family.
Well, yeah, I mean, at some point they can only make so many stories about the Skywalker family, but it.
Well, but then you're again, these are nitpicks to some degree.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm just trying to identify what it was that made me not fall into it and get absorbed and sort of ignore these things the way you were able to. Because that, I mean, look, that's what it comes down to in most movies.
I don't see the thing very
is like movies are perfect. When we go through our top 10 lists, you or I could probably complain about at least 7 of the 10 movies in some way on our top 10 of the year list. But the ones that make the top 10 list are the ones that somehow turn off that critic in your head and get you through that, 1.5 to 3 hours, depending on.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I mean, I think we're talking about, like, look, when you say the Kylo Ren character is petulant or annoying or a dick, like, you know what I mean? Like, those are judgments, essentially, right? And not to say that they're wrong, You know what I mean? Like, because they're judgments. They're just yours, right? I'm still watching that. I'm seeing those. Like, I recognize the behavior you're talking about. I just didn't find it to be a turnoff. You know what I mean?
Right. So, right. Yeah.
That's which is, another judgment, a different direction. So I guess ultimately, to me, the our differences here are just taste, I suppose. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and it's like how we interpret the performance too. You know. And how we interpret the words. I don't know. What exactly? Like, can you plot Kylo Ren's life for me at treatment level?
Like,
can you tell me what is why he's so? Like, what made him evil? What he's so angry about? Like, why did he kill his dad? What did his dad do?
It's the same thing that, I think part of it is just the same hole that Rey went to, and kind of got herself out.
Well, that's
out.
The other thing. Like, I don't understand.
That's what happens down that path, right?
But in the original trilogy, the dark side was the draw of the dark side was anger and revenge and these, like, legitimate thing. Well, legitimate's the wrong word. It's all legitimate. But these concrete events or betrayals or happenings that the dark side used to turn or try to turn people. And in this, it just seems like, oh, well, everyone gets sucked to the dark side at some point. It's just, are you tough enough to, not get sucked in?
Well, look,
Rey is, and Kylo Ren isn't, and that's it.
Isn't that a little bit more of a realistic vision of humanity, that we all are tempted to the dark side and we all indulge resist it in some way? And I would say, look,
Kylo Ren, like, revenge kills Han Solo in Episode 7, and I don't know what Han Solo ever did wrong.
That's part of I think that's some of the issue of Episode 7, that their falling out is not quite accurately described.
Well, but doesn't that then apply to
in this movie, if you're talking about his motivation, right? I mean, he's taken years of abuse from Emperor Snow and been labeled as a disappointment and a whatever, right?
That's Supreme Leader Snoke.
Supreme Leader Snoke, excuse me. Thank you.
And by the way, that's the other thing. He just, like, giant spoiler alert, in case you're still listening and not worried
about
that.
I can't believe we didn't spoiler alert any of this.
Well, and honestly, I don't know if we've given away all that much except our taste, but now I'm about to, so skip forward if you don't want to hear it.
If you didn't skip forward already, you're dumb.
Yeah.
Sorry, well, you get what you deserve.
Or you just don't care. You don't care about having things spoiled, which is right. Fine. Listen, he just stabs Supreme, like, all of a sudden now, no problem. He picks up a separate lightsaber with his mind, stabs Supreme Leader Snoke in the side, and now he's the Supreme Leader. Boom, bang, bing, all over. Isn't there an entire organization here? Like, isn't there some sort of struggle for happened? You know,
there was Dom Hall Gleason.
Yes,
and Dom Hall Gleason lost. And poor, I will say this. It's a
Dom Hall Gleason got thrown against a wall in like 3 seconds in a throwaway scene. It was very weird.
It's a byproduct of having such a deep bench.
What this series has done
with Dom Hall Gleason and Lupita Nyong'o and Gwendolyn Christie, for that matter.
Gwendolyn Christie, that's right. Yeah, I actually less of a problem with what they've done with Gwendolyn Christie and Lupita Nyong'o.
Lupita Nyong'o is like, that's criminal. It's criminal.
Why? This is Star Wars. Everyone's all gooped up with weird makeup.
It's criminal because she had one 2-minute part in this whole movie. It was dumb. She's not only one of our best actresses, but one of the most beautiful women on earth. And they shrink her into this weird mole person. Like, no.
I mean, I understand what you're saying. I have heard this criticism before, obviously, but I don't totally understand it. Like, I don't see this as like an affront or like a disrespectful thing. I see this as Star Wars and like, I don't think it's that.
All I'll say is this, is if Jennifer Lawrence was in Star Wars, they're not doing that to her.
Jennifer Lawrence is in X-Men and she wears blue stuff all the time.
I understand, but she's still in Jennifer Lawrence's body. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, but also let's veer away from this creepy direction.
Sorry, I wasn't like, I'm not, that was not me lusting after Jennifer Lawrence. I'm just saying.
It was about to be me lusting after Jennifer Lawrence, okay, so I'm trying to shift the focus of the podcast, if that's okay.
All right, we can switch the focus of the podcast because we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
And I think, look, I don't think, even with my criticism, even feeling like this is, you know, average or maybe slightly above average movie, like, I'm not trying to change anyone's mind on seeing it. You know, it's a Star Wars movie and it's worth watching. And if nothing else, it really looks incredible.
It's gorgeous. From start to finish. And look,
it's
not perfect, but I had a great time, which I can't say too many times at the movies this year. Finally, I'm guessing you've heard this stat. Maybe everyone has heard this stat, but I do love it. That since December of 2015, there have been 3 Star Wars movies and 2 Cleveland Browns wins.
Oh my God. And I don't think what one on a Sunday?
On a Sunday. Hugh Jackson is winless on Sunday.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I think it's a Thursday and a Saturday are their 2 wins.
And Hugh Jackson is a candidate for yet to open coaching job.
Yeah, 2 teams are fighting over him.
It's the NFL is man. Quick solo hype. I wrote about the NFL and all the dumb stuff it does in the Examiner this week. sfexaminer.com.
All right,
check me out. But it's uncanny. It's like it's a parallel reality, the NFL, and some of it's terrible and some of it's exciting and some of it is just bizarre.
Yeah. Or if you're a Falcons fan, it's terrible and exciting all at the same time.
Oh man. Oh man, that team. Your team lost me my fantasy semifinals because they refuse to throw the ball to Julio Jones. All I needed was a representative performance out of Julio Jones.
And for like 5 minutes, it looked like you're really getting one, right? And then
they did not throw it to him in the second half.
Yeah, it was
they
very strange.
They did not throw very it to strange. Him in the second half, and they almost lost. What is wrong with your football? I'm sorry. Okay, we shouldn't get into this. I'm very upset.
We should not get into this because I could talk for 20 minutes about what's wrong with my football team.
I know. And I could talk for 20 minutes just about the infuriating decision to not throw to the third best player in the National Football League for an entire half.
I will say this, and this would frustrate me particularly if I was a Julio Jones fantasy owner. He got mugged twice in the end zone with no calls.
Yep, that's true.
During the game, like just
that's true. He also dropped
and then he dropped one. Yeah, that was
a beautiful bomb from Matt Ryan, which those are few and far
hit
between
him in the
these
hands.
Days.
Yeah, so, no kidding. Yeah. It's the second one this year, actually, that has like hit him perfect in stride in the hands and he just dropped.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
You want to talk about good things?
I do want to talk about good things. should we stay? We're in movies. Should we just roll through our movies of 2017?
I think so, because that's actually my best list. Because we said we'd do top 10. I think we threatened to do top 5 and 5 honorable mentions, but I numbered them 1 through 10 anyway. And the movies list is the only one that I successfully narrowed down to 10 with 2 honorable mentions. That makes sense.
Okay.
See, so now, actually 12, but 12 is good for me.
I feel like movies
list.
Is my worst list.
Really?
And it's completely my fault. I just didn't go to the movies that much. So there's a lot of movies that are getting praised, some of which just came out and they're not my fault. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I also made a list of movies.
Phantom Thread yet, you know.
Right. I made a list of movies we should consider seeing in the next 2 months as we head towards the Oscars, because it's longer than my top 10 list.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the thing for me. So the total caveat is these are movies that I've seen, so.
I think that's a caveat for both of us, but I may have seen more.
You've probably seen more. And if you listen to this show at all, do know that we did see Dunkirk, and it's not on here for a reason.
You're goddamn right.
All right.
If I had made a 5 most overhyped, disappointing films, Dunkirk would have been numero uno.
Yeah, for sure. Also, Twin Peaks is not a film. There we go.
Nor is it one of the best TV shows of the year.
Agreed. All right, so we're starting at 10?
I think so. I want to throw in my honorable mentions, which are just the superhero category. I couldn't get either of my favorite superhero movies of the year onto my top 10, but I really did like both of them. We mentioned Wonder Woman earlier, and I would throw Thor Ragnarok in that pile as well. They're both superhero movies. They don't transcend the genre, but they're both really good, really enjoyable watches.
Wonder Woman is honorable mention for me. I didn't see any of the other ones except Guardians of the Galaxy, which was just okay.
It wasn't as good as the first one.
Yeah. My other honorable mention, Jim and Andy.
Oh, yeah. That was really good.
Yeah. And Atomic Blonde, which is, I wouldn't say is really good. It was just kind of fun.
Super fun. Yeah. Yep. I like that a lot. And if we're going to mention it, we should mention John Wick 2 as well, which I very much enjoyed.
Yep. Didn't see that one. I never watched John Wick 1. I think about it.
Oh, well, you should. You should watch both of those. You should have yourself like a Keanu Kills People marathon one day.
All right, fine.
It's fun, man. I have no complaints.
What's your 10 movie?
Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
All right. We just talked about this one at length. Yes. That one is on my list at number 9. So it sounds like we're pretty well
off to a similar start
in agreement about that one. It's good.
Let's see if your 10 issues. Is my 9.
My 10 is not one that we have talked about in this podcast, and I'm guessing you have not seen. It's actually a movie that many, many people hated, but I enjoyed it. It's called Mother.
I thought it was going to be Mother. That's on my list of movies to see because I've gotten enough distance now from the furor surrounding its release that I think I can digest it myself. And so I will see that in the next month, and we'll talk about it in more depth.
Mother is directed by Darren Aronofsky. It's got some real heavyweights in it. You got Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem. Michelle Pfeiffer is incredible. Kristen Wiig has an interesting part. It is a movie that that is very much experienced through Jennifer Lawrence's character, who is being very messed with, and so the movie then messes with you. So if you're gonna feel uncomfortable watching it, it's not a good time. But I thought it was really well made, and I don't mind things that make me feel uncomfortable.
Darren Aronofsky is one of the most interesting directors working. So whether you like him or not, he's out there and interesting, and I do actually want to see that.
Yeah, you'll have an opinion about it for sure.
Yeah, everyone does.
So number 9 for me was Three Billboards. Number 9 for you
is another movie we talked about very recently, The Disaster Artist.
That is also on my list. It'll be a little higher.
Okay.
But yeah, we just covered that one pretty recently. Was that last week's episode that we did that? So
I think so. So we'll talk a little more when we get to it on your list. Let's go to number 8. And boy, that is a loud siren. Did you hear that?
I did.
Yeah. Apologies to you and the listeners for the nature of my neighborhood.
That's all right. Number 8 for me is a movie that I think had some loud sirens in it at some point. I went with Girls Trip.
It's a great call. Forgot about that.
Yeah.
I don't think it would make this was such a hard list for me to make. There are a lot of movies I really like that I left off, and there's one that was a hilarious movie that is the sort of comedy that doesn't probably get made. There was a period where that kind of comedy got made too much, and I think people got sick of it, and now it doesn't happen enough, and that was a great one.
And it's funny, I watched The House. Did we talk about this on the plane?
Yeah, not good.
The House is not good. The House is a movie that is trying to do this, what Girls Trip is doing, and is unsuccessful at it, so it does make me appreciate.
And by the way, it's unsuccessful despite great performers.
Yeah.
Great, great performers. So it's even more of a credit to Tiffany Haddish in particular, but also to Queen and to Jada Pinkett. And
I mean, some of the plotting and the other stuff falls through, but the the set pieces that this movie is setting up knocks them down every time. They're
hilarious. Yeah. It's a barrel of laughs, and that's what it's intended to be.
All right, what was your number 8?
Logan. I guess this maybe counts as a superhero movie, but it really wasn't. It was a character study with some mostly kids in it, but a couple of adults with superpowers. And if you want to talk about the way people are talking about Star Wars and Rian Johnson doing this crazy original thing, I think that is really true of Logan, even more so than something like Deadpool, which is original in that it was an R-rated comedy that's a superhero movie at the same time. Logan really is a different kind of film. And I thought it was really, really well done, tremendously well acted by Hugh Jackman in particular, but also a really cool turn from Patrick Stewart and a charming little Wolverine girl. I really think if you want to call it a superhero movie, it's one that transcends the genre, and that's how it gets on my list.
All right. I didn't see it. I was supposed to, but I didn't. I have it somewhere at home. So
you may have pushed me over the edge to watch it
with that. All right. Number seven for me is a movie that I know we saw and we talked about on the pod. It was The Meyerowitz Stories.
Oh, that will appear on my list as well. I think we said everything we could possibly have said about it, but to slightly recap, I have it even higher, but it's just a smart, funny, heartful, well-acted movie, and I think it's Noah Baumbach at his absolute best.
As good as Baumbach gets, I would agree.
My seven, I'm quite sure, is on your list. It's something we talked about and everyone talked about pretty much all year long. The only surprise is probably that it's not higher on my list, and it's Get Out.
Get Out's definitely higher on my list. I think the fact that someone took a run-of-the-mill horror movie and created a serious Oscar contender out of it speaks for itself.
It's remarkable.
It speaks of the time. It's also pretty damn funny at times. Mm-hmm. There are some excellent performances from some surprising people.
And I will say the reason it's almost a tie between the top seven on this list. Well, at least three through seven is a tie for me. Get Out could have been higher. I put it next to Logan because in the same way that Logan transcended the superhero genre for me, Get Out completely transcends the horror genre because it's just not something I'm interested in, the horror genre. And this was a compelling film that told an interesting story and also had fascinating broader implications. The conversation on the way out of the theater from Get Out is as good as any movie this year. And, that's why I think the 7 and 8 for me are sort of the genre busting successes of the year for me.
All right. That's well put. So we are at number 6 for me, correct?
Correct.
Number 6 for me is The Disaster Artist, which you talked about earlier.
Okay.
5 for me. Sorry. You haven't done 6.
That was 7. Okay. Yeah, 6 for me is a movie that we tried to get you to see, but I'm not sure it ever became available to you. This will come up later, but have you finished Easy?
I've not finished Easy yet.
Okay. Well, the lead character of this film, which I loved, shows up in Easy in a great role, I thought. And the movie is called Patty Cakes. It was a small independent about a young, I guess, white trash girl who wants to be a rapper. And I thought it was the best sort of, what's the way to put this? Almost like 90s or early 2000s-esque indie of the year. There's that certain type of indie. It sort of falls, I think, into the broad category of like a Little Miss Sunshine or something like that. That's like, maybe there's one or two famous actors that you know who play smaller parts, and there's charming leads in sort of a underdog story. And it was just a really charming movie and really well made. And I liked it a lot.
I've heard good things. It sounds like something I would like. I have not seen it.
Yeah, so that's another one to put on your list, I would say.
All right. For me, we are at, what, number 5?
Correct.
Number 5 for me is The Last Jedi. And the number here I think is a little less important. I don't have a lot of distance from it. I saw the movie 2-3 days ago,
right?
But I stuck it at 5 because I think that I had a better time watching that than all of the other movies except for the 4 that are going to come next. So,
okay,
that's kind of where it landed for me.
My 5 is a movie I just saw that I'm fairly certain you have not seen that I hope we can talk about. So I definitely would like you to see. I don't think I've mentioned it to you yet. But Guillermo del Toro's The Shape of Water. I am only kind of a Guillermo del Toro fan. I thought that Pan's Labyrinth, which was pretty universally acclaimed, was sort of a weird half, like a split film that didn't really succeed completely on either of its two tracks. And I'm not a big horror guy in general, so like there's a decent chunk of his work that I'm just totally disengaged from. But this movie, I think because of the time in which it's come out, where there are all these not just big movies, but like big narratives around movies, whether it's Star Wars or the next P.T. Anderson or, you know, all these things that maybe have drawn more buzz just by existing. But The Shape of Water is, I mean, if you thought Star Wars was beautiful, The Shape of Water is, to me, probably a whole level up.
Interesting. I've seen the trailer. It looks cool. And, you know,
it looks incredible.
That's
and
one
it
thing
is,
you're going to expect from a Guillermo del Toro movie. Horror,
of course.
Horror, it's going to look really cool. Right?
So. But I think it looks even cooler than Pan's Labyrinth did, I thought. It's brighter, but it still has a darkness about it. And then, first of all, top to bottom, probably the best ensemble. I mean, the Meyerowitz stories is close, but this is probably the best ensemble cast I've watched this year. Sally Hawkins, Michael Shannon, Olivia Spencer. Is that, am I saying her name right?
Octavia Spencer.
God, I don't know why I couldn't pull that. Octavia Spencer and Michael Stuhlbarg. And did I say Richard Jenkins? Like,
you have not, no. But yeah.
This, they're all incredible, and the story is the most interesting and unique reimagining of the sort of Gilman, right? And I saw it at the Alamo, so before the movie they were showing all this old footage of the various Gilmen throughout history, you know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon and like all this sort of stuff, and seeing this sort of vague mythology crystallized into what felt it, even though it was, again, like just the sort of amalgamation of a series of goofy, usually poorly costumed Gilmen into this bizarre love story, it was emotionally beautiful. It was physically beautiful. I can't say enough good things about it. And the acting is out of this world. Strong recommend, and the fact that it's number 5 is just tells you how much I liked the other 4.
Yeah, I mean, I expect to get to that at some point during my, you know, trying to prep for the Oscar season. So if it's not during this holidays, it'll be
so
coming. And
it is
getting, by the way,
that.
Getting plenty of buzz in terms of awards consideration and talk. So I don't know that it's been overlooked entirely. So
No. I don't think it's been overlooked. I think it's been. I think it's just by nature of the huge buzz, I think like the pop culture awareness and interest has been a little lower than it might have been in like September.
Yeah, possibly. But, you know, it's prestige season.
Yep.
All right.
Yep.
So what's
I do think it will win visual awards. I don't think there's any way it won't. It's just it's so incredible and unique to look at.
What's your number 4?
That's the Meyerowitz stories for me.
Okay. Number 4 for me is The Big Sick.
Okay.
Which we talked about on this pod and you loved, and I'm guessing did not make your list from your okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It certainly made my list.
Oh, all right. So it's coming up then. You know, it's certainly the love story of the year, I would say.
Yes.
And quite funny, ridiculously poignant. Just really a revelation from everybody involved.
Yep.
You know, Michael
agree
Showalter.
With everything you just said. Ooh, I'll talk more about it in a second.
All right. Number three. I'll go at number three because number three.
I feel like there's a chance we have the same number three.
Is it a movie that doesn't appear on any critic's best of list?
Then no.
I shouldn't say any. I think it's on some, but I haven't seen it on too many. For me, this was definitely just, I just had a blast.
Then this is my number two, I think.
I love this movie. It was so fun and I thought interesting and musical and I love Baby Driver. I just ride for Baby Driver.
Yep, so that's my number two. For all the reasons we talked about at the time and everything you just said, why do we go to the movies, people, for a fun, entertaining spectacle? And yeah. Baby Driver is a home run of a fun, entertaining spectacle. It never purports to be deeply philosophical, but it has a heart and it has awesome music and it's a blast. Yeah. And I'm a little conflicted about the Kevin Spacey thing, but otherwise I don't have any
critical
thing to say about
it. I didn't know that then. You know what I mean? I didn't know that then.
Nobody knew that then, I guess. So Edgar Wright didn't know that. It's no one's fault.
Yeah.
Except Kevin Spacey's. I'm trying to ignore that part of it. I don't know, he just pops from that movie. I'm sure there are other, you know, we could have said something about Dustin Hoffman for the Meyerowitz stories, but at the end of the day, this was a blast of a movie.
Yeah, so much fun. And if you let the fact that there's a Slotsky's in the background ruin it for you, you don't deserve it. Okay.
I'm feeling like three of our top four are going to match because that was my number two. My number three is, which I knew it was not your number three when you said it didn't appear on critics' list because this is in the top two or three of most. Number three for me is Lady Bird. And again, we talked about this recently. But I put it next to the Meyerowitz stories for a reason, not just because they're dating, but because tonally these are the same genre of film. And I just think as incredible as Meyerowitz stories was, Lady Bird stands out as for being a more unique and I think uniquely feminist vision that. It was just a beautiful story. I mean, I like, Baby Driver's number two, but most of my top five are talky, thoughtful movies.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. And Lady Bird was a great one.
I agree with everything you just said. I just, for a movie that really is about nothing, like it's an unspoilable movie in terms because nothing really happens so much.
Right. Yeah.
It's so beautiful, and the performances are incredible. That this is coming from a first-time director, it's what a treat. I can't wait to see her do more things.
The career of Greta Gerwig, film director, is one to watch for sure.
That I sort of wonder, and
I have a personal connection to her. I should see if we can.
Yeah, sure. See if we can get her on. She's going to be hard to get once the Oscar season rolls around.
Yeah, that's the truth.
I kind of wonder this, and maybe if we ever do get her on, we can ask her this. If they had gone ahead with that How I Met Your Mother spinoff that she had been signed to star in, like would this movie exist?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Like what a weird thought. All right, so my number two, we're on number twos, right?
Yes.
My number two is Get Out, which we have already discussed. Your number
Mine
two
is Baby Driver,
which we've already discussed. My number one is in fact Lady Bird.
Three of our, cause four, your four was Big Sick, right?
Yeah.
And that's yeah. So three of our top four match. So Lady Bird, Baby Driver, and Big Sick made the top four for both of us. Big Sick is my number one. These are personal taste lists and I probably more than anything else, am a sucker for a romantic comedy. Some of my favorite movies are romantic comedies that I will willingly and readily acknowledge are not particularly good films. So when someone is able to make a movie that is distinctly a romantic comedy, which is one of the most genre-y genres there is, and yet manages to put together a story that doesn't feel rote or overtold at all, that doesn't feel false, even though it has some insane elements to it, where the acting is as good and the dialogue is as well crafted and smart and funny and heartbreaking. And I just, this movie is about as perfect as they come for me.
It's delightful. And it's, it really is a great point, because, you know, romantic comedy is so genre-y. To get a movie that has those highs and that uplift, but is never cheap about it.
No, never feels cheesy.
Yeah, it's
such an achievement, and everything, literally everything about it, from the writing to the acting to the story to the direction of Michael Showalter. It's tremendous, and I think it's a harder thing to do than it feels like probably to most people, because it's like, oh,
otherwise,
well, it's just
people
a bunch
would do
people.
It right.
Well, people, no, I know, but I'm saying it's the sort of movie where it's like, oh, well, it's just a bunch of people in rooms talking for the most part. Like, anyone could do that. It doesn't take all that much. But to then just be pitch perfect on everything, I think, is so hard. And it's so hard to even know when you're putting something together if it's going to work on screen. And to have everything work as well as it does in this movie, I just think it's tremendous.
It is tremendous. All right, we got to move on to TV, because we still got music to do. So
I was worried we were going to run through our top 10 list too fast. And
we'd never do anything too fast on this.
Let me start. That's true.
Kolsky, so a thing happened.
Probably the most predictable possible thing, despite the fact that I utterly failed to predict it.
Yeah, the thing is that we just kept on talking and talking and talking and talking, and there's another hour's worth of show still to go.
It's just too much podcast for 1 week, especially holiday time. People are like hanging with family, going to movies. We understand, and so we're breaking our rambles into two digestible pieces. This is what happens when you have the on-air production meeting at the start of the show and then do the show almost twice as long as you wanted to, is you afterwards go back and record a bridge, so that we say you've just enjoyed about an hour of Star Wars and top movies of 2017 talk. You're going to have to wait a week for our discussion of the television and movies of the year.
Yeah, and TV was a doozy. So
TV was the big one. I mean, I think anyone who listens to the podcast knows this, that yes, we are the toy department, and yes, we try to cover sports and movies and music as much as possible, but TV is our bread and butter. And I would say both of us struggled to narrow our top 10 lists down to 20.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard, and stuff that didn't make our list is, you could have a list of stuff that didn't make either one of our lists that I think would be very close to as good as the stuff that did. So,
yeah, I mean, I would put it this way. There are probably shows that we didn't even mention that we would both agree are among the top, like, 50 shows of all time.
Yeah, it's great.
Which is a really crazy, crazy thing to say.
What a time to be alive.
Yeah, TV's been around a while, and like a huge percentage of the best of it has been made in the last 5 years. Yeah. It's a pretty crazy thing.
It is. It's amazing. All right. So yeah, we'll be back with another show next
week. Which I guess technically would be our 100th episode, but we're really just going to call it episode 99 part 2. That will be next week on the day after Christmas.
Can we go with episode 99 part 2, Attack of the Clones?
I think it's going to be
Infinity War
99 part 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Electric Boogaloo. All right, I can't really argue with that. All right, until then.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed, the lights out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.